All right, first rule of order, do not embarrass the artist.
How y'all doing today?
The artist will embarrass themselves.
Having a good afternoon? All right, thanks for coming, It's a beautiful Sunday here in Toronto. We appreciate you coming out. My name is C.B. Sobolski. I'll be moderating the panel. And I have to say, when I was a kid growing up reading comics all the way through, I've been a fan of these two gentlemen's work. It's an honor to be on the panel. I can't believe it. And please allow me to introduce Mr. John Romita Sr. It's not John Romita Jr. Possibly next in the living legacy of Romita artist, Vinny Romita. So how we're going to do this is, I think it's a sketch off. They're going to be drawing. I think the way we're going to do it is take suggestions from the audience, see what people would like to do. And as they're drawing, just to keep things going, if you have questions, feel free to ask them. I'll just try to moderate and get them to speak, answer some of your inquiries as they go.
So we have to speak and draw at the same time?
I don't know.
We can't.
That's
not allowed to do that.
As long as I don't have to chew gum.
That's right. All right. Now, do you guys have anything you prefer to draw? You want to take some suggestions from the audience? Or how do we
want to suggest? Isn't that the idea, is to do an improv type of thing?
Hey, we're
not. I asked them not to do females. I like subtleties.
They want up. You want to see?
All right,
we better get him out of here first.
Why don't we take a vote then?
Snowman.
How about who wants to see Spider-Man?
Oh,
we got a good amount of hands. All right, Hulk.
Oh.
Nick Fury. The toss-up between Spider-Man and Hulk. What do you guys think?
I don't know. I'm getting tired of drawing the Hulk.
I'll do Nick Fury. I think I can do him. But I got it. I can't do Steranko's wetsuit. I mean, that's too much trouble.
Now, isn't this supposed to be fun? Or are you around with serious drawing? I don't want to compete with this guy. That's not fair.
And I don't want to compete with him either, believe me.
Well, what do you want to draw?
I'd like to make fun of everything I draw. So is it Nick Fury first?
Nick Fury first?
Now, we both got to do it. Hey, listen, can I just do heads? Right? That's the best part of my
you
drawing
do the heads
anyway.
And I'll do the bodies.
Only hands.
We'll put the...
It's a good idea.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to do Nick Fury then?
Nick Fury?
Nick Fury. Nick Fury it is.
What was that suggestion again, you guys?
Nick Fury!
I got to stand and draw.
That's all.
Yeah, come over here. You back.
Yeah, we didn't bring any drawing boards. Anybody got any drawing boards with them? Yeah, some of the guys have. I'll bet somebody. There you go. I knew that. You can't have a comic artist audience without a drawing board in the audience.
Which eye is the patch on again?
I know. Which eye is the patch on?
His left eye?
Left eye?
Our left or your
Wait,
left?
I have a lot of reference at home. Without reference, I'm lost.
That's right. Well, we never did.
I did Nick Fury. I should remember.
I dare you forget.
The right, don't do that. His right eye, or it's the right eye facing us?
His right eye gone.
Coming and going.
I'm dyslexic when it comes to patches.
Put one on each.
Put one on each. That's a great idea.
Oh, no, those,
can't go wrong.
Now we need something a little
Nick
bit
Nick Fury is shooting
anyway.
Like this here. We're supposed to start drawing, by the way.
Okay. It's a little small. Does that help you at all?
I'm going to stand.
Be
I've been sitting for 3 days.
All right, I'm going to sit because I'm old.
No sit.
Now,
oh, man.
Can I do a head?
That's what I'm going to do.
Huh?
Yeah.
No, I thought they wanted a full
thing. There's not enough time to do all full bodies.
All right, let me do a head. Let me see. I'll do Milton Caniff.
I'm going to copy.
So
yeah, he has to copy me.
Anyone have any questions while we go? If you want to just raise your hand. Anyone? Okay, over here.
Yeah, John Sr., this is your first visit to Toronto. How do you find the city?
Actually, it's not my first visit. I'm sorry to disagree. But it's the first visit in 20 years, which probably covers half of you, most of you people. I used to come to Silver Snail almost every year for about 5 years, and I had a ball coming up here every time. It's a great town, and only my complete lack of energy and laziness has kept me from coming back. Armand Gupta has been calling me and emailing me for 20 years, begging me to come up. And I keep telling him, I'll try next year. Try next year, it's 20 years, it's finally too long. And all my fans are dead by now, so new fans come in, it's fine.
You know how you find Cincinnati? You know, yeah, you find Toronto, you make a right at Cincinnati.
I find Toronto always great. It's a great town.
Next, anyone? Keep putting up your hand.
Now, did you establish which side?
I got a head start because you were talking.
Which side is a pat? I'm going to do one side, he's going to do it on the other side.
No questions?
No questions?
Right, I have questions. Back, why are we doing this?
This one's for Junior. Junior, I know like you're going to say your dad's your favorite injury, obviously.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Next question. I almost forgot.
Yeah, but I just wanted to think about Williamson's inking on you on Daredevil, because I thought that was really awesome and added like extra depth to your pencils. And I thought, you know, he's the best inker out there. I just want to get your opinion on his work.
What? At the time, it was a nice safety net. It was like having him ink. If I made a mistake, Al would have fixed it. He says I didn't make any mistakes, but that was Al. That was a feeling of comfort. That was a comfort zone. And I had the same feeling as having him ink it. And now with Klaus Janson inking most of my stuff, because of the familiarity and the ease that we work together, that's the same feeling. It's you know, it's nice to know that if I do make a mistake, he'll either call me and say, stupid, you made a mistake, or he'll just fix it. It's mostly the former.
How many guys are reading World War Hulk?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. With power in those pages, give it up for that. You know?
That's good stuff.
I actually just got a peek at some Daredevil pages. I believe you did.
Yeah, I just did 2 pages for Daredevil, but they only call me when they want a nostalgia page. This was a 2-page dream sequence of Matt Murdock and Karen Page in their imagination 20 years, 30 years ago. That's when they called me.
Those pages are going to be in Daredevil 100. I believe it comes out in a few weeks, actually. So.
I never remember.
I have 2 questions for Senior.
Yes.
We were chatting at the sign-off, the autograph session, and I brought in cover 50 for him to sign. I was chatting about how I appreciated the fact that he had taught me how to read, basically. I was just going to ask 2 quick questions. When you drew covers for Spider-Man, what was your favorite amazing cover? And secondly, who did you like drawing better, Gwen Stacy or Mary Jane Watson?
I used to love to draw both of them, but I did take special pains to make Gwen a real lady, a special angel. In fact, I take a little credit. I think if anybody remembers that far back, Gwen Stacy was a little bit of an ice princess.
Yes.
When Ditko first was using her. She was the one that would always freeze Peter Parker out. And when I took it over, first, and I didn't do it on purpose, because I don't believe in that stuff. I don't believe artists should, the first thing they should do when you take over a strip is change it. But something in me, when I'm doing my heroine or a hero, I try to make him as good looking as possible. Stan used to drive me crazy, saying Peter Parker looks too good. He's supposed to be a nerd.
Yeah.
So with Gwen, I subtly made her sweeter. I made her pleasant expression. She started, and I don't know if she started to treat Peter better because I did the drawings or not. All I know is that she started to treat him better. Stan used to admit that sometimes the artist used to slant his direction on a character by the way he drew. So I got a feeling that I turned Gwen into a pretty nice person because I like to draw nice people. And Stan says, it's okay with me. You do it. After about 6 months of kibitzing me about Peter Parker being too good looking and too well built, you say he's supposed to be a nerd, he's got to be skinny, what are you doing, he's got narrow shoulders, he's not supposed to dress right. So I gave him a turtleneck. He said, now you're making him a movie star. and so he, but then after a few months he said, oh, the hell with it, do it the way you want, because I couldn't change it. It was something I had no control over, and the characters got so good that we couldn't control them. You can ask John and CB. The point is, Marvel characters, a lot of people say, why did we do things? We don't have any choice. If you take a character that's great and you put them in a certain situation, you know how they're going to act. And you don't have any choice. If you put them in a situation, you've got to respond that way. Am I right?
Yeah.
Don't you find it? That's it. That's all I can say.
What was your favorite cover?
I guess I have to say 50, but I did a lot of covers that I enjoyed. I liked little trick covers, you know, big close-ups, reflections, all that stuff. The Doc Ock cover. A lot of covers were good. I didn't like crowd scenes. I hated crowd scenes. So I let Gil Kane do those.
I hate crowd scenes too, but I still get asked to draw crowd scenes every other panel.
Oh, yeah. That's because you do them well. That's your mistake. Don't do them well.
I don't know. I did Contest of Champions when I was very young, and there was a million characters in it. And back then, I remember somebody saying, well, obviously, you don't mind drawing a lot of figures. And at the time, I chuckled, ha, ha, ha. And it's bitten me in the rear end since.
It's true.
I get all of these D.W. Griffith, War and Peace type of comic books with every character and his brother in them. I'm getting to do Spider-Man, back into Manhattan again with crowd scenes and Times Square and explosions in the middle of Times Square. Yes.
That'll be good. More questions? Go ahead, sir.
My guess is it's probably affected Junior more, but how do you find being in the same profession has impacted your actual style? Like, did you draw things purposefully to be different?
That's a great question. The normal human being would probably do that. I had no conscious effort at style. I wasn't capable of controlling the style. And something I've said a million times is I have a deadline style. Whatever comes out on deadline is my style.
True.
Now, what that did was give me a style, because I was so busy trying to make a deadline and make a buck that whatever came out, I was not conscious of it, and it became a style. And then when I got better as an artist and I was able to control myself a little more, it's like when he became able to write better, his style looked different as his writing style. Same thing with me. As I got to be a better artist where I was actually controlling what I was drawing, I heard that my style changed. I just got capable. And I never really made an effort. Everything started out in my head as his work and John Buscema's and Jack Kirby's. By the time it got to my fingers, it was mine.
That's the way a great question. That's the way all of us are.
Can I ask a question, if you don't mind? It's about work style. Now, you work across numerous pages at once from time to time, right? Is that something you learned from your father, or were you two separate working styles?
I don't know if I learned that technique, that protocol from my father. I just do as many pages that I'm comfortable with that day, whether it's laying out a whole bunch of pages or if it's tightening up three or four the next day. It sometimes drives editors crazy, and inkers even crazier, but I'll hand in two or three pages in one week and the following week hand in 15. And I don't know if I'm the only one, but I think I'm not the only one that does it that way. You kind of go with your strength. One week, I can lay out three books in a row, get all the storytelling down the way I like it, happy with it. And if I try to tighten up any of those pages that week, I might not do as well as when I'm ready to tighten up a whole week's worth of pages. It's almost like a football player. You know, you get yourself prepared for something, and then you're on it. Mm-hmm. So some weeks I tighten up, some weeks I lay out, and there's no rhyme or reason to it. And you can ask, you get carried away.
I always do.
You can ask the editors, it drives them nuts.
So you were more working one page at a time then?
I never did across two pages, and I'll tell you why, because I'm limited in my scope. I was doing 9 panel pages because of Kirby, and 12 panel pages because of Ditko. And I never thought big. Then I started to think 4 page, and I thought, wow, 4 panel pages. And then I did 3 panel pages. Then I did full pages. The thing is, I never thought ingeniously like these guys. Ingenuity was never my forte. I always did it with hours of work. These guys did it. They always do it with ingenuity. And I admire the ingenious people because they get more sleep than I do.
More questions? Go ahead, sir, and then we'll go back over.
This is for John Sr.
Yeah.
Until recently, you and the clever Stan Lee held the record for most issues on a book completed by a single creative team, basically The Amazing Spider-Man. And by sheer coincidence, your record was broken by a team on a Spider-Man book, meaning Mark Bagley and Brian Michael Bendis. And what's your take on Wolf the Force being passed and the concept of Ultimate Spider-Man? Because these are just like revamped stories that you standed together 40 years ago.
Is that right? I didn't know that.
Yeah. Concepts and modernize them.
Bagley. Well, there's your answer right there. they didn't have to stop and think about it. They just went ahead. But that's no. I didn't even know we had held the record. I didn't think I lasted long enough. Stan was always taking me off the book to put me on Captain America or Fantastic Four or to do covers. I never had a chance. If I could have done a 10-year run, I would have preferred it. I wanted to beat Kirby's run on the FF, 120 issues, whatever it was. No, I didn't even know we had any kind of record, and certainly I'm not worried about it being passed. I applaud that young punk for doing that.
Actually, I'm going to be obnoxious here. Have you ever seen all of that series back to back to back, the Bendis and Bagley series?
Yes, I have.
There's more close-ups in that run of books than in any book in the history of man. I think he did more work in 6 months than Bagley did in 10 years.
Maybe more panels.
I love Mark Bagley's work. I just wish I was working with Brian Bendis. Because I get Michael Straczynski, and I get Mark Miller.
And the new guy.
And I get Greg Pak. And Bagley gets Brian Bendis, who gives him close-up. The world is dying behind this close-up. And Bagley gets paid the same as I do. It really kills me.
You know, one of the tricks Kirby used to use was that a lot of action used to go on and reflected in somebody's visors or glasses. And all the action's in the glasses, but it's a big close-up of the head for double spread. You know, you've got to be a genius.
I joke, but I love that Bagley's work. I have no problem with that. Just jealous as all get out.
Talking about record being broken, I think I was talking about Lee Kirby, but I do know that you and Stan did like 40 books together on Spider-Man.
If you throw in my 4 years when I started the strip in 1977, prehistoric times, I did 4 years of that strip while I was still trying to produce for Marvel on staff. Wow. And a million covers in between, and toy designs, and so I think I did close to a 10-year stretch like Kirby did.
Now, is that Marvel's record, or is that the industry? Because I think Eric Larson has done 10 years or 11 or 12 years of the Dragon.
Cerebus.
And Cerebus? Okay.
And sure. Sergio on Gru, right?
Oh, that's right.
Cerebus has done just by one.
Okay. So what is the... Let me know what the actual record is. Is it years, or is it numbers of books?
I think it's number of books.
What did he do, 300?
300 consecutively.
Yeah, consecutively.
I want to ask the Nick Kirby freak out there.
The Nick Kirby?
I mean, the Nick Kirby.
You know, this is really not fair.
All right, here we go. The first ones are done. All right.
Oh, wait.
I just wanted to ask him, does he...
You're all going to want this.
I know that Sergeant Fury used to have a stubble. Did Nick Fury have a stubble, too?
Yes.
Yeah. And yes. By the way, you know what? One project I wanted them to do years ago... Now he's doing my stubble. I need a shave, too.
There you go.
Years ago, I wanted them to do a humor strip called Sergeant Howler and His Furious Commandos. And they never listened to me.
Yeah, go ahead.
There used to be a character called Millie the Model. See, that's the ingenuity part.
Scroll so I can see the...
It's a walking cane,
This is called a sleight of hand. It takes the attention away from it. I can't draw as well as he is.
That's a lot of crap.
That's why I put earrings in my ear. Take the attention away from the broken nose.
This is the better one.
That's Jack Kirby, that's all. Kirby's in my veins. Every once in a while I let a little blood out.
Alright, so next, who are we going to see? Who do you want?
Blackheart!
Everybody's so quiet in the first one. Now
the Hulk doing what?
Everybody gets rowdy.
The Hulk doing what?
Hey, he's going to do the full figures, and I'll do the
hands. You know, he reminds me of Drew Carey. Is that that show, the improv show?
Are you going to do the Price is Right?
Hulk versus Thor. Come on down.
He's going to do the Price is Right next.
That's I think right. At the end we're going to wrap these off as well. So you want to stick around? So do you want to do the Hulk or Spider-Man?
Sure.
The Hulk?
Hulk.
All right.
Blackheart!
Right, we might have time for two more, so we'll start with the Hulk and see how the time goes. So.
Hey, wait a second. I'll do Bruce Banner, you do the Hulk. Here's what I do.
Okay.
I'll do Bruce Banner.
You got to start.
I'll do,
you have to be
Bruce
on the left.
Banner.
He's got to start.
No.
Left to right.
I'm going to do Bruce Banner here, and you do the Hulk growing out of Bruce Banner up behind him.
You know, you're such an art director.
All right. Then you do Bruce
okay.
Banner.
No. Go ahead. You work, and I'll talk.
Ask him to do something else while I'm.
No,
doing
that's
this.
A great idea. I like that.
This was one of the.
Because whatever I do, it's going to look great since he's
covers.
Underneath me.
No. I'm just going to do it.
Take your time. No rush.
Just. Continue.
You know, we got 40 minutes left. We might get this in.
Continuing with the question.
Pressure, always pressure.
I'll ink it. You pencil it. Any other questions?
You mentioned some writers that you worked with, Straczynski and Pak. Is there anybody out there you're wanting to work with?
I'd like to work with Frank Miller again, because I had so much fun on Daredevil.
Yeah, they were great.
But he's... busy making millions and
he's busy
doing unimportant stuff like picking movies.
He's busy
everybody
I, Alfred Hitchcock.
Yeah, everybody I used to work with is making movies and a lot of money. Maybe it's my fault. I don't know. Could be. I'd like to work with Frank. That would be a lot of fun. I'd like to work with Alan Moore and then send him a letter bomb or something. I don't know.
But now, after you finish the Hulk, you're going to be going back to work with Mark Miller again on Kick-Ass, correct?
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes. It's a creator-owned project with Mark Miller. And so I get the chance to work with Mark again, but it's an Icon label book. It's kind of an R-rated... it's supposed to be R-rated, but we're going to try and... I'm going to try and tone it down a little bit. Mark Miller is a wild man.
Now, I always remember, when you were on Wolverine, there was the scene... with the sharks.
Well, yes,
I remember
with
you
the
were
sharks.
Just like, what is this? It was what the script said, Wolverine fights 100
Wolverine,
sharks in
yeah.
a tank or something like that.
He had the description, as I recall, was very simple. Here you go, Sicilian. He calls me Sicilian. Here you go, Sicilian. This will be the easy part of this series. And that was the preface. And then the rest said, the shield... anti-aircraft carrier or aircraft carrier, whatever the boat is.
Yeah.
It's the helicarrier in the water, which is a pain in the ass enough to draw. With a full contingent of jets and helicopters and planes and several thousand crew members, is struck by a torpedo and sunk. Okay, I don't have to show every single human. Turn the page. And they all get eaten by sharks.
One big banquet. Oh.
Okay, I can get that in a page. One, turn the page. And Wolverine goes underwater because he's captured and he gets free and fights all said sharks.
And there, make one of Wolverine fighting a shark.
Yeah. And there's no way. Now there's ways to cheat in comics. There really is. There are ways to cheat, and there was no way to cheat in this one. I didn't have any choice, and I ended up getting one shot in gutting a shark, and then we had to show a million different characters. And when I got done with it, I felt this ease. Okay, I got past the worst. Then the next issue was a million ninjas. That was his description. A million, every ninja in existence comes down upon, along with some sentinels. Oh, and it was in China. And he oh, was it? No, it was Japan. I'm sorry,
yeah.
Japan. It was Japan, and he was going through some burial ground, some with all sorts of statues and all sorts of reference on. Oh, it gives me. I get hemorrhoids just thinking about it now.
No Spielberg corpses popping up out of the grave?
No. And then I remember my wife saying, why are you drawing every single figure? Yeah.
Draw every other figure. You
what a great question, honey.
Why did you draw every other figure?
Oh, yeah, I should. But tell her the story about the page you did with the...
That, you know, that's a parallel to me. If anybody gets that new book of mine, the book that just came out.
You know, you're a real pain in the ass.
Just do
oh,
just
man.
Do just lines.
Just
of the explanation.
Just do that.
You're a genius. Do lines at birth. What he went through.
Oh,
back,
you.
When I was making like $20 a page, now he's making a little more than $20 a page. So they're asking him to do that much more. Stan, one of the first things Stan gave me to do, I don't think this is working anyway.
I want to show you what I'm starting with. Hold on a second.
Is that mic working? Can you guys hear all right? Or?
No. This is what I'm starting with.
Here.
There you go. Okay.
Take this one.
Yeah.
Well, this is to show you how bad I am as an inker.
That's not even a breakdown. That's a scribble. He's working
You're
for the scribble.
Me? Knock yourself out.
Stan, no. If you look in that book, there's a page reproduced from 1953 that I did while I was still in the Army. I was stationed in New York, and I was able to do Stan's stories. It was a Civil War. It was in a war book. Not a Civil War. It was a Revolutionary War book, story. And the splash page is reproduced. I don't know who got it for me. They reproduced it in that book, All That Jazz, that just came out. Got to look at it. It's funny. Stan wrote this script for me. He says, I got a company of British redcoats coming down a Boston street. Company of British redcoats. Crowds of mixed Yanks, patriots and Tories on both sides of the street. On one side is a building, a mansion, with a terrace. And on the terrace, not two, not three, not four, five people of the family, all speaking, balloons from every one of them, are arguing. One of them is a patriot, the old man is neutral, and one brother is a patriot, the other one's a Tory. They keep arguing about the Revolutionary War. On the other side of the street, there are people throwing rocks at the British troops. In the distance, down the street. Now remember, I got to do the streets of Boston, right? In the distance is Bunker Hill. Not just Bunker Hill.
The fight.
The battle of Bunker Hill. There's smoke coming from the hills. And you can't even see it on the book because it's reproduced small. This little shot of the splash. Believe me, when I looked at it, I thought he was joking with me. And I called him up and said, Stan, do you realize don't I need 2 pages for this? That's nothing. He said, look at the bottom of the page. There are 2 more panels on the page. I had to fit 2 panels on a page with more dialogue and captions and the title. If you look at that page, you will see what I went through is just a microcosm of what he just went through with that story. I couldn't believe it after he did it, let alone think of it when the guy gave it to him in a plot. Writers are crazy.
What's more interesting is a writer that's a screenwriter originally, like Greg Pak is from the theater, the movie industry, is multiple action panels. Which, unless you're an animator, it's impossible to do in comics. But Greg, as brilliant a writer as he is, either can't conceive of stop action is what a comic book is, or he really thinks that we can animate. But I won't hit him until I'm done with the series. But he's asked for a couple of, and I've shown him, I've read him, I'll call him up at 10 o'clock at night, screaming at the top of my lungs, you've got to hear this. One panel, the Hulk, this is a description of a panel, I'll try to paraphrase, it can't be exact. The Hulk comes down from the sky, lands, and at the same time throws 2 or 3 helicopters, 2 or 3 tanks up in the air at several helicopters. I swear, this is one panel. Okay, let me figure this out. And he just thinks of, Spider-Man, you know, the image of Spider-Man bouncing 2 or 3 times in a panel with several figures. What he is hoping I would do is the Hulk doing it in multi-figured
strobe.
Motion. Strobe. But this is only one of 6 panels on the page.
How about the one where he's ripping open these huge doors and somebody's crowd...
Oh, that was... Yes.
...breaking through.
He said to me...
So first he's breaking open the doors, now they're breaking through.
The creature. This Sicarian creature with this like this gigantic squid. He wants me to open the door. Hulk... No. He has an axe and he chops the chain. First, this is one panel.
And then he rips
axe.
It open, right.
Hulk takes an axe. Right there, that's a panel. It's like George Costanza. There's a show right there. Hulk grabs an axe, breaks the chain open, the creature comes out and attacks the Illuminati. That's one panel.
Panel two.
And the next thing, there was six panels on that page. So I called him up, and I couldn't get him on the phone, so I left a really nasty message on his answer machine. Something about all of his dead relatives. But fortunately, he wasn't home at the time.
Why don't we go here to the front?
John Sr., I was wondering if you could, speaking of the 1950s, if you could tell some stories about Bill Everett and Joe Manili and what you would have learned from that. And then I was wondering if Junior then could relate some stories about the creators he might have met.
Oh, yeah, we've run into a lot of guys. Let me tell you, working with people like Bill Everett, it was like a politician rubbing shoulders with George Washington and Abe Lincoln. I mean, when I was 10 years old, Submariner was the biggest thing in comics. And here I am sitting next to him. We go to lunch together. It was just like a dream. Same thing with meeting Kirby. And the stories he used to tell with curly hair, I can't tell them in mixed company. Who's the other guy?
Joe Manili.
Joe Manili actually showed me more in one day. Stan sent me to his studio. This guy was a genius. Not only that, but he was so prolific. He was faster than John, if you can think of anybody faster than John.
I'm struggling right now, so yeah. Make y'all feel good about that.
Some struggle. The thing is that Manili, Manili died at the age of 38. Before that, he had done thousands of pages for Stan. He was a dynamo. While he was talking to me, Stan sent me to his office for him to show me how to handle a page in the style that Stan likes. And while I'm standing there like a kid, I was 20 years old, I think, 21. And I'm standing there, and he's talking and drawing and drinking coffee and answering the phone. He lays out two pages of a fort being attacked by Indians, talking about too much on one page. Stan must have written this for him. The Indians are circling the fort. It's a stockade fort. Guys are shooting with long rifles from inside. The Indians are with bows and arrows and guns. Dozen horses, 15, 18 horses running around. Trees in the distance, mountains in the distance. The people on the fort, somebody on the top of the stockade, somebody on a building on a roof is putting out a fire that the Indians started with a fire arrow. I'm telling you, while he's penciling this, he's talking to me and answering the phone. Pencils it quickly. Before lunch, he finished it. After lunch, comes back, he picks up his pen. Barely dipped. The whole thing was outlined inside of like an hour and a half. And then he starts with a number 5 brush. A big, you know I use a number 3 brush at my boldest. I used to use the number 2 when I was a kid. Number 5 brush is a watercolor brush that you can paint buildings with. He used to do that to put his blacks in. Slash, slash, slash. The whole thing was done before I left at 4 o'clock. And every step of the way, he taught me something. And he never had to say a word, don't do it this way or do it that way. All he had to do was show me. From that minute on, I knew I had never inked professionally. And from that minute on, I knew what an inker has to do, how to keep the lines apart so they don't run together when they reproduce. Everything. He taught me in one day. I learned more in one day than some guys do in a year and a half. And all I could tell you, he was a genius. He could do anything. He could do humor. He could do medieval knights. He did the Black Knight. He could do science fiction. He could do westerns. He could do love stories. Anything you asked him to do, he just turned a switch. Dynamite. I wrote for publication. If Joe Manili had lived, just imagine, he died at 38 at his prime. If he had lived, half of us would have been out of work. All the guys that Stan used to throw work at was because Manili wasn't there to do it. Between Jack Kirby and Joe Manili, he wouldn't have needed anybody. That was his bullpen.
Tell the stories about Kirby. Most artists will lay a page out and then tighten up willy-nilly anywhere. Great, the easiest figure first. Figures first, background first. Didn't Kirby start from the upper left-hand corner and just draw down to the right-hand corner?
Well,
is that true?
No. By the time I was watching him, he was doing silhouettes. He used to do, and you know, he never did. You know, when I work, I do big strokes. He never did a big stroke and never sharpened his pencil. He used to joke with me, "Why are you sharpening your pencil? You don't sharpen your pencil.
Takes too much time."
Takes too much time. He used to go. He used to go little short strokes and do silhouette. Then he'd do another silhouette. Then he'd do the crowd behind him in silhouette. Then he'd put features in. Then he'd put knuckles on the hands. Then he never was fast. All he did was he never stopped. I used to go fast, do a page very quick, and then stop for coffee, and then maybe run around the block, or maybe play ball with the kids. He never stopped. Sat there. The guy could do 5 pages a day because he was like a machine. But the main thing he was that I never had. When I look at those blank pages, I have to feel my way and get some shapes to understand what I want to do. He said he saw every scene he was going to draw on the page when he was blank.
No layouts.
And all he did was draw. No layouts. He used to see it. Just, all he said was, I just drew what I saw. I said, if I had your cigar with that projector in it, I would have been rich. That's the guess we had. He had a projecting cigar. And all the scenes came out on his page. The guy was one in a million. But Manili was a special character. See, I give him 3 fingers, he puts 5 fingers.
Next, down. I'm drawing and you're inking.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, we still got some time. So, as Spidey was the number 3 choice to go for Spider-Man?
Yeah, I guess we got to go for Spider-Man. Yeah.
Okay. This, you got to fix.
I'm sorry I started doing
You got to fix. That's okay.
I'm not going to fix anything.
No?
No, I'm going to do what I get.
All right.
All right, we can keep going with the questions then, sir.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He can't talk and draw at the same time.
I can't do that either. Ask my wife. He listens. I'm a married man.
A couple of weeks, it's going to be September 11th, and I remember going on the rack to see Spidey 36, the best cover, by the way. It was really emotional. I was just wondering, if you felt, as a native New Yorker, any emotion drawn that
top? Yeah, that was not a lot of fun.
That was a bad week.
It took a lot longer than a normal book. And, well, one, because it was a very dense book. Second, it was a lot of reference. And third, the obvious was keeping myself focused on what I was doing instead of what was going on. Because
yeah.
While I'm drawing this, buildings were falling down during the aftermath. And it was not a lot of fun. And I couldn't get back to New York to be with them. And I was worried about relatives. We figured any day somebody was going to be found to be missing. And his sister's sister-in-law was one of the people that got out of the buildings, one of the buildings. So we expected stories like that. And I couldn't get back. There were no flights back, etc. And then trying to draw this, because a couple of weeks after it happened, they told me that this was going to be the subject matter of this issue. And both of us in harmony said, that's the dumbest thing we've ever heard, because you don't draw a comic book about such a tragedy and horror like that. And obviously we were wrong, because it was such a beautifully written story. Joe Straczynski said that couldn't see anything on the paper, and one moment later it came. I forgot what the line was. There are no words, because he was telling somebody in a phone conversation.
He couldn't write.
There's
it
no
either.
Words to, and then he stopped in the middle of the conversation and wrote down there are no words, and he wrote in the next 2 hours wrote the whole script. So, and before and after, he thought it was a crazy idea too, and thought he couldn't do justice to it. And while he was doing that, I'm saying there's not a chance in hell I could do this, because I'm worried about, oh my God, I have to draw accuracies, I have to draw buildings coming down, and you can't make light, because it basically is a comic book. But to me, that legitimized the medium immediately from the moment pencil took paper. And after that, a couple of teary nights and conversations with him and my wife. It eventually started happening. It took 5 weeks to do it, and I don't remember. I usually remember panels vividly. I remember some panels. If I'm talking to somebody and they'll show me a book from 1978, I'll remember who I was dating at the time, that kind of thing. But when I did that book, it's very blank.
Like a blur.
I don't have a real memory of doing that. And I haven't read it since it came out. I can't.
Yeah.
Can't do it.
My best friend, Zimbabwe, comes in my life. She read on the way back from Toronto. I showed her a copy of issue 36, and she said that it was one of the best stories she ever read about that.
Thank you.
It's a masterpiece. It's an absolute masterpiece. That's the greatest piece of art I ever saw.
Thank you.
Absolutely. And when we did the Heroes book, to try and raise funds for the firemen and the police widows and the orphans. I said, I can't do that. It'll break my heart to do a scene of somebody being hurt. And the only thing I told them I would do Flight 93, because at least we were fighting back in that scene. So I quickly did a sketch where the people on the plane were throwing laptops and cell phones and charging the terrorists. And I faxed it to them, and unfortunately, somebody had already done a finished piece of art with almost the same scene, so I couldn't get a chance to do that. And I said, well, then I can't do anything. I can't keep myself from tearing up. If I'm going to do any scene of anybody getting hurt or a widow, an orphan, I'm going to go out of my mind. I finally settled on a fireman's wife looking, and I said, I'll do it on one context. At least she's looking at the phone. There's a picture of her fireman father, husband, and she's holding her baby, and she's looking at the phone, hoping to hear that he's okay. And that I said I could do, but you give me a picture where I have to do something hopeless, I do not want to do it. I mean, the way he was crying through half of that story, I was practically in tears through the whole time I tried to do that too. I can't even imagine why we did it, and yet people said it was very cathartic and it was good and we raised money, and I have to look back and say they know better than I did. But if it were up to me, I wouldn't have done that book. I couldn't live through it.
That cathartic is a great word, because while I was doing issue 36, I guess you call it immersion, but instead of sitting around the house, if I had a normal 9-to-5 job and having the television or the radio constantly pouring this horror out, you can turn the television off when you want to, and you could just read a book, read a sports magazine, and take it away from your mind. This was on. I had to have the television on behind me constantly for updated versions of the site, the Twin Tower site, because from the time I started, by the time it came out, it would have been completely cleaned up, or not completely, but it would have been advanced to the point where it was cleaned up. So I tried to keep it up to date as possible. So I had it on behind me. I had reference from newspapers and magazines all over the room. I had it plastered with this. And I don't know if you've ever seen Clockwork Orange. They prop his eyes open so he becomes numb to violence. This is basically what happened. After a certain amount of time, it didn't affect me emotionally. Like, I wasn't crying anymore. I was actually working. So the last 3 weeks, I did the majority of the book, as opposed to the first 2 weeks, where I just kind of moped and felt sorry for myself. And then I got a phone call from Greg Horan, a retired firefighter who lost 42 of his friends. And he didn't call to tell me that. He called to talk about the fact that I was drawing a comic and I needed reference on firefighter uniforms. And this is the biggest wise-ass in the history of mankind, this guy. Nobody's a bigger wise-ass, and he was choking up on the phone. And it just kind of sets you, I can't feel sorry for myself anymore. You know, this is a lot worse off. And it made it easier for me to draw, which is silly, but it kind of put things into perspective. And I hate talking about it. I'm such a lightweight when it comes to that, because it's such a frustrating feeling. And that's exactly what Joe Straczynski wrote with Spider-Man. The frustration.
Yep.
Spider-Man represents all of us, that we couldn't do anything.
Yeah.
And it's so brilliant. He says he can't get that kind of spontaneous brilliance again. Take that for the way it comes. But
yeah,
is that enough BS for you guys?
Now that we cheered you all up.
Yeah.
On a lighter note, I just wanted to say that one of the first comics I ever bought was an old Uncanny X-Men. The cover with where they were fighting Cooling Gath, and it's got Xavier and Caliban all merged into that ugly little thing.
Wait, the artwork or the figure? Tell me I have ugly artwork. Are you one of those guys online? I'd like to talk about that. If any of you people are in here and are named Doc Orlando, I'm coming for you. You know who you are. This guy hates everything about me, and he won't stop reading the books. So I would like to say to Doc Orlando, you're an ass, but thank you for your money.
I'm
sorry, you had a question somewhere.
I just wanted to put that out there and say I really enjoyed that. That's still
thank
one
you.
Of my top five.
I get people that are Spider-Man fans say that two-issue
loved it.
Was it the death of Spider-Man, so to speak, or was it who died in that?
It's the cooling gap, the sorcerer,
right,
and
right.
Went over and turned it off.
There's another issue. There's another one. Chris Claremont did one of those. Turned the whole city of Manhattan into this supernatural. Yeah. Oh, thanks, Chris. And there was no internet then that you could reference, so I had to go out and find books at bookstores. Oh, only I could get stuff like that.
Why don't we go over here?
Okay, just to stand with your last comment with Guy Cady. I mean, on one side, it's hard to avoid.
Is that you?
Yeah, Doc, is that you, Doc?
He's saying behind the books and saying it's kind of avoid because you draw like everything. But I just want to say, are there any certain characters, not in terms of life as in the character, but just from an artistic point of view, where you hear you got to draw, you're like, oh, dear God, no, I have to draw this guy? And then on the opposite side, character that you could just draw forever to get in time for both for me.
Good, you go.
Well, I'd love to draw Daredevil all the time. Daredevil's my favorite character. Spider-Man's got too many webs and the thing's got too many rocks. I like drawing Mary Jane all the time, and I like drawing Gwen, although it's very hard. I can't make her pretty enough. The thing is, the only character that I hate to draw, what's the name of the character that has no head? It's just got a mound on top. You draw that.
Oh, the Juggernaut?
The Juggernaut.
Yes. How does the Juggernaut turn his head? By the time he turns around, he gets his ass kicked.
You know, I tried drawing the Juggernaut a dozen times on a cover. I cannot make sense of that character. If a guy doesn't have a neck and he doesn't have a head that you can see, to me it's like, you know, it's like a worn down Hershey's Kiss. I wanted to kill with it. And there was one other thing I hated to do. Whenever Stan ran out of a thought to do for next month, he'd say, let's do another Spider Slayer. And you know how many Spider Slayers between Ditko and me and Gil Kane? About four? There was that one that looked like a medicine cabinet on wheels.
Yeah.
You remember the first
yes.
one? And then I had to do one that was like animatronic. He had arms and legs, and everybody thought that was the dumbest thing they ever saw. I thought the first one was dumb. This one was worse. And then Gil Kane came up with one with arms and legs. All I know is that every time Stan said, let's do a Spider Slayer, I used to run for the door. Don't want to do it. Hated it.
How about Spider-Man's, Peter Parker's motorcycle?
Oh.
Or Ghost Rider's motorcycle.
Yeah, well, I only did Ghost Rider on covers.
You don't remember this because you never work on covers. My favorite is Daredevil, too, which a lot of people love drawing Daredevil. It's like drawing Batman with DC. Everybody loves to draw Batman. There's something about the simplicity of the costume. But the worst character ever created costume-wise is the Jack of Hearts. Keith Giffen must have been on drugs that day. Or his house is full of hearts. I don't know. Because there's so many hearts on that costume. I know it's the Jack of Hearts. Put one heart in the middle of his chest.
It's hard to see countdown. Oh.
I had to draw that. And I have never forgiven him for that. You know why Keith Giffen looks so old? It's that costume. It'll do it every time. All right.
I'll go over here. Please.
All right, this is what he's got to start with, and you'll see what he does when he finishes it.
He's giving me...
Move it down a little bit.
Give me the business. Wise guy. Oh, you know what I used to do? I used to do this for kids. When I went to young kids at classroom, I would do this drawing, you know... That drawing, Spider-Man upside down. I would do it this way.
That's what I just did, yeah.
I know. I would do it that way, and I, before I put the webbing on there, I would ask the kids if they could tell me something about what is Spider-Man doing in this picture? And then you'd all say, the damnedest things would come out of those kids. I was trying to get them to be surprised when I went this way and put the web on. They were giving me all sorts of toilet.
All right.
So he does that, and it reminds me of all the times I tried to be cute with kids, and it backfired. I didn't know their imagination.
In your defense, John, one time, Ultimate Spider-Man after the origin, actually issue 7, Peter Parker took down his web shears the first time, and he seemed to hang upside down with his underwear, for God's sake. Just his briefs, man. mean, 10-year-old kid, it's like a pedophile's wet dream, man.
Oh. Yes, you know, you don't think of those things while you're doing the drawings, but people can interpret. They can interpret anything they want.
No, you can't have any.
For Junior, was there a defining moment when you realized you'd follow your father into the industry?
Yeah, there was a moment. There was a moment, yeah, when he had been working, after he'd been working for DC doing romance comics. And he had brought home some of DC's superhero books. I remember Hawkman and Metal Men. I actually enjoyed Metal Men briefly, and my brother and I used to read it. Yeah. But it was still a separation between us, because he was doing romance books. And then I recall him working on Daredevil issue 12 with Kazar up in the tree and the Plunderer surrounding him. And I remember asking him, I don't know how the conversation began.
Years old.
I was 8 or 9. I was 64. I was 65.
That's right.
And I remember asking him, who's this guy and what's going on? And he proceeds to tell me that the guy up in the tree is basically Tarzan with a saber-toothed tiger. Oh, that's great. I've seen Tarzan. Okay. And this guy here in the costume with the horns on his head is a guy called Daredevil. I said, wow, who is he? Well, he's an acrobat. And before he could explain, I said, who are the guys around him with the guns? Well, those are that's the Plunderer, and those are his men, and they're pirates, and they want to kill Daredevil. Oh, really? Oh, that's great. How's he get out of it? Well, he's got these special powers. And then the eyes started getting in. And then he explained to me that Daredevil was blind. And oh, my, what? That can't be! And then he explained to me. Probably it was late because I was asking him so many questions. And I think once he explained to me who Daredevil was, and he has special powers, and he's a superhero, that was it. I was locked in. I could not be dissuaded from that point.
He didn't
stop
drawing after that night.
That was the greatest. I mean, the light bulb, the whole nine yards, because that was so vivid. And remember, at that time, this is 1965, there's nothing but five or six channels in New York. And all I watched was black and white movies, a couple of color movies in the theaters. But this was complete. It's like watching the Wizard of Oz going from black and white, all of a sudden you're in a colored world. That's what it was to me, and that was the moment. I think that might have done it.
Yeah.
Hi, Junior. How you doing?
All right.
Good. Sorry, Chris. What about your friend here, the fault with Bruce Jones? How was it working with him?
That was a lot like working with Paul Jenkins, in that the Hulk wasn't Hulk smash Hulk. It was a more deep thinking Hulk, and I was a little bit upset that I couldn't do more action, but I got a chance to work with Paul, which was a lot of action with the Abomination. And interesting enough, when I worked with Paul Jenkins on Sentry, the same exact thing happened. I thought it was going to be a great fighting series with a little bit of melodrama, and it was all melodrama. It was all psychiatrist's office and very little action. So working with Bruce, I got a chance to do a lot of storytelling per se.
See if anybody has a finer pen.
Anybody have a thin Sharpie?
Yeah.
Just it's great.
No, I don't want to do the webbing the same.
In that run, was the chance to do the silent issue, so to speak. I think a whole bunch of artists that month were supposed to do their book without any dialogue, and everybody was calling me up worried. I don't know. I've never done this before. Oh my God, no dialogue. How are they going to know what the story is? And I actually did it faster than I've ever done any book before, because to me that's what it's supposed to be about. Dialogue is supposed to be icing on the cake. So that was the punctuation of that run, working with Bruce Jones, was the silent issue, which was a lot of fun.
Go ahead.
You
had like a couple of stints on Amazing Spider-Man.
If you could speak up, it's a little bit.
You had a couple of stints on Amazing Spider-Man.
Four.
Four, okay. Just wondering if you're going to go back to Amazing Spider-Man. And second part of the question is, when are you going to sell me the original artwork of Amazing Spider-Man 500?
Okay. Like Groucho Marx said, answer the second question first. I'm not selling that. First of all, he's got some pages.
Right.
And we're going to try and hold on to that. I think I don't even have all the pages. No, I have to get some back from Scott Hanna. That's right, Scott Hanna has.
We got to mug the.
So we're going to have to send Uncle Guido over to Scott Hanna's house. I'd like to hold on to things like that. Just for posterity's sake. So when I'm 75, maybe somebody will want to line their bird cages and give me a couple of bucks for it. And I'll put his son through college. I don't know. As far as doing Spider-Man, not him. He doesn't get college.
I get to do Spider-Man again next month. I begin, as soon as I finish the last issue of the Hulk, I'm going to start on Amazing Spider-Man again. Woo! And Klaus Janson is going to work with me, and Dan Slott will be my writer, and I'll be his artist. Klaus Janson is going to ink it with me. Yes?
Oh, and also, you're also collaborating with Stan Lee. That was the last Fantastic Four story.
Right.
Now, what's it like working with the man that spoke to your father? Like,
every story I told him about working with Stan, he just had a better story. Stan's an interesting character. He's Felix Unger on drugs. I got the plot from him the way I used to work when I first started, and the way he worked with Stan. Although you never really got a written plot per se, you got verbal plots. Stan just sent me a loose plot, which was added to by Tom Brevoort. Brought it up to date for continuity's sake. And then there was an interruption because of legal wranglings between Stan and Marvel over the Spider-Man movie. So there was a 3-year gap in between the first half of the book and the second half of the book. And when the second half of the book was penciled, Stan had nearly I think Stan forgot.
He did. He's at a panel.
That's right.
We've got to work together.
You're not going to work together, kid. He had forgotten because it was 3 years and a million things had happened to him between then. But once he got it and his memory was refreshed, he claims to have written it within one day. And I haven't seen the book finished or written yet. I don't know what dialogue he's written, but I'm looking for. I've seen the coloring, and it looks great. Maury Hollowell is a brilliant colorist, and I'm looking for. It's supposed to come out this month. I don't know if it's coming out before the end of the month or not.
I think it's.
Oh, it's out already.
No, I think it's coming out in a few weeks.
Okay, it said August, but it's probably going to come out in September. All right, it's been done for a while, but there's a lot of coloring to do. It's 48 pages. I can't believe I finally got a chance to work with him. And I've been in the business now 30 years, and when he's always telling me, gotta work together, kid. We gotta do something. I work with your father, I work with you, I'll work with your son. And it was a great plot. And all I could think of was his run with Jack Kirby on the Fantastic Four. I hope it comes out as good. Scott Hanna did a beautiful job inking it. It's really special. And it's got a lot of stuff in it. Yeah. Again, Stan never did that before, but I guess he figured Romita Jr. crowd scenes.
Yeah, you always told me you could do these, right?
Yes. Okay.
Hi, Jeff,
then you.
From the Amazing Spider-Cast. I wonder, in recent generations, there's been podcasting, like internet radio, and a lot of interaction between fans, a lot of information sharing. I wonder what your view was as you're being interviewed with our competitor cast, Carl Space. They're awesome. But I wonder what both your generation views on this new medium that is bringing comics in the people of all ages, households, and you know, what's going on there.
I don't know about that. I'd like to know more about it.
I think it's obvious what it does is it expands the readership where for hundreds of years comics couldn't break the comic fandom. It's given a chance for people to sample it outside of comic fandom, so to speak. But it's also a lot like 24-hour news. The Emperor's got no clothes on. You really are called to the table for any mistakes, all mistakes, and a lot of scrutiny, which is good and bad. I don't have any problem with scrutiny. It's just that it can be nasty sometimes. I just think that keeps everybody straight. I think the industry is better for it. Makes people work harder. And there's higher rewards for it because of that. But I think it's a natural progression. It has to be this way. And everything, every medium goes through this. We thought there was an advantage with VHS tapes, and it helped a little bit, and so on. Podcasts, the PC is going to become the microwave of 2010, you know, that kind of thing. And it can only help. Oh, thank you. All of them? Or Doc Orlando hates my guts still. I still think he's in this room.
He feels his presence.
Yes. I feel like the little lady in
I think we're almost about out of time here, so what we'll do, we'll start the raffle now while John Senior finishes inking the Spider-Man
piece. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm so slow.
No, take your time.
And I think what we'll do, you want to just do it, pull one, come up, people can pick which one they want? Or
yeah, sure. Unless you want to have this guy pick them out. And
Vinny, you want to start?
Get over there and dip your hand into the barrel.
Wait, man, excuse me, man. Yeah, my
awesome. No, I think you keep that, don't you?
I do.
Yeah, that's
your. Oh, did you put the other half in there?
Yeah. The,
yes.
They put the other half in there. Yep. Yeah. All right. Why don't you pick one out? Cool. You want to read it into the mic?
Nobody wants Dare Fury.
Everyone got their tickets out?
Now, this person gets all of them?
No, gets one. We'll do four people are going to...
But this, you know what? Add this to the good one.
Okay, three people.
That's
then.
Three people, yeah.
0195377.
377?
Seven.
Three, seven, seven?
Oh. Mm-hmm. All right.
Come on up.
Doc Orlando.
Doc Orlando, is that you?
Okay.
Oh, I can pick which one I want.
I think.
Let me guess. Which one do you want?
Well, this is not finished yet. You don't want this one.
Oh, that's the reason why he's not going to pick it. Sure.
But he may not.
You have a choice.
He may not be a Spider-Man.
You got, yeah, you want to hold those up? You got the Hulk, Nick Fury, and then Spider-Man.
And Spider-Man and Nick Dare Fury. You
I think
get.
I'll go with Spider-Man and Nick Dare Fury.
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
I get
you
it.
Want to go with another one, Vince?
All right, second prize.
0195294.
294. All right. You gotta sign this one too.
Yeah. Kidding.
Here's your pencil. Out.
Very good. Awesome. Can I get a picture? With
sure.
Maybe I grab it.
Yeah, if we could wait till the end, we'll take the pictures. Oh. Pictures over here.
Okay.
Thank you. And this is the last one.
Oh, wait, which one is this for?
This was for the Hulk.
Okay, okay.
0195397.
397.
All right.
All right.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
Any one? How about we do one final question, then we're going to have to...
He's been waiting a good long time.
Is it true Shocker is your first character?
Did you do Shocker?
Did I do Shocker?
Did you design
No, the Prowler. I came up with the name The Prowler.
Okay. Yeah, when he was 13. That's the one. That's when he was 13.
Right.
He submitted a drawing of a very slick science fiction kind of character, and he called it The Prowler. And Stan said, I love the name, but the costume doesn't fit. So we put his name on a character I designed for the TV Terror that never came out.
The Prowler was that.
The Prowler was the TV Terror, and so we put the Prowler name on it, and that's been it's been history ever since.
Thank you very much.
Thank you all for coming. I think you guys could...
You might want to see this. Hurry up. No pressure, but hurry up.
Wait, I'll show this before the webbing is done. I don't sign. Oh, I got to do the webbing on the foot.
Finish the webbing.
Yeah, you got the foot.
You see why I never made any money in the business.